It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
International pressure builds to a return to civilian rule in Burkina Faso. Zambia's acting president reverses his dismissal of the ruling party's leader. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The leaders of Ghana, Nigeria, and Senegal are to arrive in Burkina Faso today as international pressure builds for the military to return power to civilian rule following the resignation last week of longtime President Blaise Compaoré. The African Union has demanded a return to constitutional rule in 2 weeks and threatened sanctions. In Washington Tuesday, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the U.S. is concerned about the situation.
We call on all parties to avoid further violence and work together toward a peaceful transition of power. The United States condemns the military's attempt to impose its will on the people of Burkina Faso, and we call on the military to immediately transfer power to civilian authorities.
He says the U.S. is encouraged by reports the army will transfer rule back to civilian authority. Meanwhile, France Tuesday said it played a role in the evacuation of Mr. Compaoré to Ivory Coast Friday.
La Côte d'Ivoire.
In Abidjan Tuesday, Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara said Ivory Coast is grateful to have President Compaoré. The Ivorian leader said he found Mr. Compaoré to be in good spirits and impatient for peace to return to his country. Zambia's acting president Tuesday backed down from a decision to dismiss the ruling party's chief. The reversal announced by the acting president, Guy Scott, and Edgar Lungu, secretary general of the ruling Patriotic Front Party. Police and pro-Lungu demonstrators clashed late Monday over Mr. Scott, who is a white Zambian, who fired Mr. Lungu following the death last week of President Michael Sata. Mr. Sata died October 28 at a London hospital after a long illness. Under its constitution, Zambia must hold a presidential election within 90 days. This is VOA News. The Associated Press reports thousands of Sierra Leoneans are violating Ebola quarantines in search for food. President Ernest Bai Koroma has defended the strict quarantines as an effort to halt the spread of the deadly virus, which has killed nearly 5,000 people. Speaking Tuesday in Monrovia, the head of the UN Mission for Ebola Emergency Response said there has been significant improvement in the fight against the deadly disease. Meanwhile, Catholic health experts met at the Vatican Tuesday to discuss their response to Ebola's epidemic. Dr. Clemens Ochel, an international health advisor at the Medical Mission Institute, warned the epidemic, first detected in March, has disrupted social relationships in affected countries.
I've talked to parents who said it's hard for us to keep our children at home because for several months schools are not working. And many people lose perspective of life because they cannot follow their normal livelihood activities. So we have to consider that Ebola is not a visible but an invisible destruction to the fabric of the societies that cause untold trauma.
The Ebola coordinator for the Guinean Health Ministry on Tuesday said the number of new cases has dropped in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. He said the challenge now is to trace all those who have come into contact with Ebola patients. Meanwhile, a hospital in Switzerland has begun testing an experimental Ebola vaccine made by the drug company GlaxoSmithKline. 120 healthy volunteers are taking part. A UN panel Tuesday said gold and diamond sales are being used to finance conflict in Central African Republic and called on UN peacekeepers there to monitor mining sites to clamp down on illicit trade. The panel said some 3,000 people have been killed between last December and August of this year in the wake of the sectarian violence that has gripped the country since mostly Muslim Salika rebels seized power in March 2013. The panel's report said in the north, former Salika fighters have been imposing taxes to fund their operations and issuing mining licenses near Bambari. And it said there's been no progress in disarming these splintered rebel factions. The Congolese army on Tuesday clashed for a second day with suspected Ugandan rebels known as the Allied Democratic Forces and National Army for the Liberation of Uganda and blamed for recent massacres in the east. According to civil society and UN sources, the French press agency says the battle erupted on Monday when troops attacked rebels thought to be organizing an assault on the town of Beni in North Kivu province. According to the army, at least one soldier and two rebels have been killed. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burkina Faso's military leaders say they are ready to give power to a national unity government in 2 weeks.
Everybody is happy, but we know that it will not be easy because the population is expecting to improve the way of life of the citizens.
Albert Kende is a member of the Opposition Union for Progress and Change, UPC party. We'll examine the influence of Burkina Faso's late leader, Thomas Sankara, on the country's most recent revolution. And the leaders of Sudan and South Sudan agreed to begin marking their disputed border.
I think this was a very important one and melted all the ice between the two countries. And now we can say that the relations between the two countries are in a very advanced, good relations.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's Minister of Information. Former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar says he's committed to peace. Striking Zimbabwe doctors want to meet with President Robert Mugabe, and the lack of funding may lead to the shutdown of South Africa's AIDS activist group. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A member of Burkina Faso's opposition coalition says civilians are ready to put together a national unity government to replace the military, which took over after longtime leader Blaise Compaoré fled the country. But Albert Kende, responsible for inter-party relations for the Opposition Union for Progress and Change, UPC party, warns it will not be easy because the opposition is a melting pot of ideologies. This comes as Burkina Faso's military said on Tuesday that it is ready to hand over power to a civilian-led government within 2 weeks. Kende says he's sure a government will emerge from the opposition melting pot because the people of Burkina Faso expect nothing less than improvement in their lives.
Yes, we have already tell that they have to put the country on the rule of civilians, and the military agree for that. But now we have to make those things go smoothly, so we cannot go in precipitation. We have to take time to organize the transition. So we are very confident that in a few days, all will be okay.
Is the opposition ready? Because sometimes there's so much division within the opposition that they don't seem to know what to do.
Yes. You know, the opposition is a melting pot. There are many political parties with different ideologies. Some are communists. Some are liberal. Some are African socialists, like Mr. Julius Nyerere. All these people are there, so we have to discuss. But in the melting pot, we'll find the right man and the right solution.
So what's the mood in the country? Do you think the people of Burkina Faso will be happy now that the military says it's ready to return the country to a civilian rule?
Yes, everybody is happy. But we know that it will not be easy because the population is expecting to improve the way of life of the citizens. So the next government who is coming will have a good task. It will not be easy. They have to work hard. If they disappoint the population, the same thing will come back. Will come again. So I think and I hope all those who want to take the responsibility in the government should be aware that all the nation, all the citizens, all the population are looking to them. So they have to be careful because they have to work hard for all the people in this country.
President Dramani of Ghana and the president of Nigeria are due in Burkina Faso on today, Wednesday. Does the opposition hope to meet with them?
Yes, we hope so. We appreciate the support of the ECOWAS to our situation. We know that maybe by tomorrow we'll meet them to understand what they are telling. But we are very confident that CEDEA will support our country to find a good solution as soon as possible.
French President François Hollande said that France was instrumental in getting former President Blaise Compaoré out of the country. What would you like to happen after things settle down?
We don't want to comment the way the French president speaks, but I think it is a good thing if the French president have let him to go away and leave the country. It was the only solution. He left the country and you say immediately, please come back. So I think it is a good thing. We have appreciated.
Albert Kende is a member of the Opposition Union for Progress and Change, UPC party. He was speaking with me from the Burkina Faso capital, Ouagadougou. Amid Burkina Faso's recent popular uprising that ousted President Blaise Compaoré, there were signs of the influence of the country's long-dead revolutionary Thomas Sankara. Sankara, who was ousted from office by Compaoré in 1987 and assassinated. Ernest Hage, a research scholar at the Institute of African Studies at Columbia University, is this week releasing his book, Thomas Sankara, an African Revolutionary. Hash was able to interview Sankara a number of times when he was still alive. He tells Ricky Schreier that Sankara's political legacy of improving conditions for the rural poor left an impact on the country, and there are echoes of his impact also in the country's current political movement.
Protesters are wearing Sankara t-shirts, sometimes carrying portraits of him. The main opposition coalition, at least up until the ouster of Blaise Compaoré, started signing communiques with one of the main slogans of Sankara's revolution, Homeland or Death, We Will Win. It plays well to the sentiments of many of Burkina Faso's young people. Some of the parties in the opposition coalition, and maybe a half dozen of them, call themselves Sankarists. They generally champion policies that his government had carried out in a different way, because they're all for elections now, and there weren't any elections under Sankara's revolution.
When Sankara was overthrown and assassinated in 1987, that coup was led by Compaoré, and many say he is responsible for Sankara's death. On social media, there were people talking about, you know, justice finally being served to Compaoré for orchestrating Sankara's death. Is there a sense of that, you think, in the country right now?
I have seen statements to that effect, not just for the killing of Sankara. There was the famous killing of this independent journalist, Norbert Zongo, in 1998. That was never really investigated. There are all sorts of financial scandals. So there's an expectation and a hope that there will be some serious investigating of these things. Compaoré always denied that he ordered Sankara's killing, but it was his people who carried out the coup. I was there at the time of the coup in 1987, and the reaction of people was just palpable. They really mourned Sankara. They hated this new regime. The new government, the new people, tried to organize support demonstrations, and students just stoned them. You know, I mean, they couldn't do it. Compaoré couldn't go on TV and address the population for 4 days. There was so much anger. Yeah. I mean, of course, some sectors, higher level civil service, you know, they felt a sense of relief. You know, and those who might want to put us, you know, embezzle funds, certainly, you know, they saw new opportunities now that Sankara was gone.
Did you meet Sankara then while you were there ever? They say he was quite charismatic. I mean, you know, he played the guitar, he was in a jazz band.
Yeah, well, you would see him, you know, he could be bicycling down the streets of Ouagadougou, you know, while he was president. Of course, you know, he had a security guard bicycling behind him, but, you know, or, you know, at a film festival. I remember once you look at the corner of my eye, and he's sort of leaning up against a tree in civilian dress, his arms crossed, listening. And nobody drew attention to him. You know, when you spoke with him, he was very direct. You know, he'd look you in the eye, and he was witty. He loved making puns in French.
Is there a risk of romanticizing Sankara? Because while he had programs that were trying to help the poor, etc., he also stifled free press.
That inevitably happens. You know, when somebody dies young, he becomes a martyr, and a certain mythology and imagery gets generated around him. Many Burkinabe know, however, that some of the more repressive traits of Sankara's regime was supporters of Compaoré.
That was Ernest Hage, a research scholar at the Institute of African Studies at Columbia University and author of the book Thomas Sankara, an African Revolutionary. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from New York City. It is Wednesday morning, November 5th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The presidents of Sudan and South Sudan said Tuesday that they will begin to mark out their disputed border. South Sudan President Salva Kiir met Tuesday with President Omar al-Bashir in Khartoum. Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal tells me the two countries will set up a joint committee to oversee the demarcation.
In fact, actually, many disputed points have been raised, and they agreed to resume talking and negotiating about the other ones which have not reached agreement. It's about 12 points, actually. And I think this was a very important one and melted all the ice between the two countries. And now we can say that the relations between the two countries are in a very advanced, good relations. There was transparency and they talked very frank about apprehensions from this side and that side.
How soon do the two countries hope to begin the negotiations that will take care of this disputed border?
In fact, actually, this is one of the points, disputed points, and the talks will start next week. But we think that if the Sudan efforts for making the two parties coming closer and talk together and finish the war now in the south, this will waken up all other fights and problems.
You know, Mr. Minister, coming to this summit, South Sudan has accused your government of supporting rebels in South Sudan. Did the two leaders talk about that?
Of course, they have seen talk about that. And these are only allegations. You know, there is no proof. And we talk to this. And actually, if we are supporting the rebels, the situation will not be like that. The situation will be more advanced. We declared our vow to the president that Sudan is never fighting any sort of aggressions against southern Sudan. And they agreed that Sudan can play a role. And we have given the consent of President Salva Kiir that President Bashir and after tomorrow he's going to Addis Ababa will play a role of making the two parties meeting together and reach some sort of reconciliation. I think this step can lead to raising up the negotiations which have been taking place.
I read somewhere where it said that President Salva Kiir has promised President Omar al-Bashir that South Sudan is going to work to lift some foreign debts for Sudan. Did President Salva Kiir promise your president something?
Yes, actually, and he declared that in the press conference which had been held on the end of the visit. Because actually this is one of the points which should be taken by the South since the cessation of the South.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Rebel leader and former vice president Riek Machar says his group is working to end the ongoing fighting in South Sudan. Machar says IGAD heads of state have assured him of a breakthrough in the talks on the sticky issue of the formation of a transitional government for South Sudan. He says his delegation at the IGAD-led negotiation will remain in the Ethiopian capital until a peace deal is signed with the government of South Sudan.
Our desire is to have peace in South Sudan, and that is why we accepted the mediation of IGAD, the regional body. And we have been engaged since January 1st, 2014, in this forum seeking peace. But there are difficulties in the forum. One is the interference of the IGAD summit in the negotiation process. At times, there is confusion. You don't know whether it is the summit that are the negotiators or it is their envoys, although we know it is their envoys who are the mediators. So this has caused a confusion, particularly on the 24th to the 25th of August, when the IGAD heads of state and government signed a protocol which was not agreed by the two warring parties.
What are some of these progress that were made in Bahar Dar?
Two main issues were discussed. One is the system of governance. As you know, we said we need to introduce reforms in the country for adopting a new system of governance. And this system of governance is federalism. It is a popular demand by people of South Sudan that a federal system be implemented in South Sudan. The second issue was the structure of the transitional government. To me, it is not the most important. The most important is to address the root causes of the conflict. Once you address the root causes, then you can have a transitional government which will implement what is agreed. But apparently the region thinks that we must discuss the structure of the would-be transitional government. We need to ascertain that either at the peace talks or at the next coming summit.
the issues surrounding the transitional government are still presenting itself in the talks there. One sticking issue is the powers of the prime minister. If the two parties are going to opt for a president, vice president, a prime minister, and two deputies, there were issues to do with the powers of the prime minister. Was that resolved?
The way you say it now creates concerns. The system which may work during the transitional period, I think, would be a system where there would be a president and a prime minister. Not what you said, president, vice president, prime minister, two deputies. This system was experimented with in Kenya. It didn't work. It didn't succeed. We should not repeat mistakes made by others. We advocate during the transitional period a system where there would be president and prime minister. Then the powers can be divided between the two.
That was Riek Machar, leader of the rebel SPLM and former South Sudan vice president. He was speaking from South Africa to John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Striking junior and middle-level Zimbabwean doctors say they want to meet with President Robert Mugabe following their failure to reach an agreement with the health minister and other senior government officials over their pay grievances. Around 400 junior doctors went on strike last week on Monday at the lapse of a two-week ultimatum for the government to address their demands for a pay increase of around 400%. Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association Secretary General Dr. Farah Makoni says negotiations have been slow.
I think today I can confirm that we held a bipartite negotiating meeting, which is basically a negotiating forum as part of the statutory instrument in the health sector. That meeting really is one of those routine meetings where you go and there's the workers' representatives, the ZHDA being represented by its executives. We also have the nurses, the lab technicians, and so forth, all from the medical fraternity. We also, from the employer side, had members from the health service board. We also had a representative from the Ministry of Finance, a treasury representative. We also had the human resources personnel from the Ministry of Health. So basically the meeting we held was not necessarily center stage on what is happening. By what is happening, I mean the strike issues. However, they were highlighted in the meeting.
What is the situation like at the government hospitals?
The situation in the hospitals, unfortunately, is pathetic. You have wards that accommodate up to 40, 50 patients. With maybe three, or some even closed, some of the wards even closed, theater emergency, theater cases, only what they deem to be their emergencies are what they can handle.
That was Dr. Farah Makoni, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe program. The Treatment Action Campaign has long been a beacon of hope for many South Africans suffering with HIV and AIDS, but now it is threatening to close its door within a month because of a severe budget shortfall. VOA's Anita Power visited the group in its Johannesburg offices and brings us this report.
When the Treatment Action Campaign was founded in 1998, HIV was tearing at the very fabric of South African society, breaking apart families and communities through death, fear, and stigma. In the ensuing years, the TAC fought tooth and nail for the rights of AIDS patients and scored many landmark victories. The group was instrumental in forcing the government to back down from its initial AIDS denial, which some healthcare critics say led to more than 300,000 preventable AIDS deaths. The group also helped drive down the price of antiretroviral drugs, involved communities in the struggle against the virus, and fundamentally changed the public perception of HIV. Today, the TAC is one of South Africa's most respected groups, but it faces imminent shutdown amid a budget shortfall of about $900,000. Mark Haywood is one of the group's founders.
You know, we can't let up or relax, and without strong civil society and accountability, that's the danger.
TAC supporters say the fight against HIV and AIDS has not gotten any easier. Today, an estimated 6 million South Africans are infected, and the organization estimates that 500 people die every day. In a perverse way, the group is a victim of South Africa's success. Now that it is a middle-income country, major foreign donors have pulled back. But unless it gets the money it needs, the group says it will shut its doors on December 1st, World AIDS Day. It is encouraging ordinary citizens to donate online at www.tac.org.za/donate. Many big names have rushed to their aid. In a pre-recorded message, Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu pinpointed what makes this organization unique.
HIV/AIDS brought out the best and worst in us. Political paralysis caused delay and confusion. Death blighted the land. But citizen activism, led by the Treatment Action Campaign in particular, restored hope and dignity.
TAC General Secretary Aneli Yawa painted a grim picture of what would happen if the coffers are still dry come December 1st.
If we don't get this man, we don't have plan B. We've got plan A. And plan A is to make sure that we get this man. Because if TAC closed down, we need to understand, all of us here, that many people will die.
That was VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Marco Woma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Morocco edged their hosts United Emirates 4-3 in a friendly beach football match in Dubai on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Morocco play Portugal at the same venue. Meanwhile, South African coach Ephraim Sheikh Mashaba says they will seek to honour the memory of their slain captain Senzo Meiwa when they host Sudan in Etegwini in their 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier next week. Mashaba made these remarks when he named a 26-member team for their remaining two Nations Cup qualifiers later this month. After Sudan, South Africa face African champions Nigeria, who will host them in Uyo, Akwa Ibom State, South Nigeria. In boxing, Uganda's lightweight boxer Sharif the Lion Bogere knocked out Mexican Fernando Garcia in the fifth round in Plymouth, Massachusetts, United States of America to secure his third straight win this year. The victory has set Bogere up for a world title shot next year. Finally, in athletics, the IAAF Evaluation Commission has completed their visits to three candidate cities vying to host the 2019 IAAF World Athletics Championships, the IAAF revealed in Monaco. Spain's Barcelona, Doha in Qatar, and Eugene in Oregon State in the United States of America will each get a chance to make a final presentation to the IAAF Executive Committee before the winning bid will be announced on the 18th of November in Monaco. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a great day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations Security Council says it is ready to consider a draft resolution on war-torn South Sudan that would impose sanctions targeting President Salva Kiir and his rival former Vice President Riek Machar. Australian Ambassador Gary Quinlan, whose country currently chairs the 15-member council, said Tuesday there is considerable interest in targeted sanctions and arms embargo, but he did not announce a timetable. And South African state prosecutors have appealed the conviction and sentence given to track star Oscar Pistorius. And that is it for this Wednesday, November 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you have a nice day, Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked. VOA Africa, don't miss.